You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 381. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm joining you from my basement here in Niagara Falls, Ontario, buried under at least 2 inches of snow, maybe less. It's really not that bad, I guess. But it's new, so it feels oppressive. Joining me on tonight's show, someone that's not oppressive at all, someone very accommodating, lovely person, really, Mr. John Gentile. Hi, John.
You know, it's funny, Adam, is in the punk world, you said somebody that's not oppressive. Maybe you don't remember, but in the punk rock world, you used to joke that I was the conservative guy on Punk News. I specifically remember doing Ramones Week. I think I compared you to Joey. I compared Ricky to Dee Dee. I think I compared Tom to Tommy, of course. And I compared myself to Johnny. And you right, you were like, yes, you're wildly conservative. The funny part is somehow in the world that we're in, I find that I'm the left-wing guy fighting against right-wing guys.
Yeah.
In the comment section and other places.
And I'm the one doing smack all the time. It's just like a weird, it's just a weird mix. Also, on tonight's show, the original Tommy.
Yes.
Well, I guess not the original. One of the originals. One of the first 7 Tommies on Earth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah, Mr. Tom Trauma out in...
And we are, in fact, buried in snow, Adam. I mean, we are getting just hammered.
Do you get the...
Lake effect?
The lake effect we do. Thing? So I live in a weird little weather bubble because I'm surrounded on 3 sides by water and it has a moderating effect. Yep. Oh, and there's like an escarpment. So like Niagara is actually really mild, but we're about 40 minutes from Buffalo, and Buffalo is just on the other side of the lake, and Buffalo gets walloped. Yeah. So whenever, I'll turn on the radio and they'll be like, all you'll hear is screams coming from the NPR station
I can be to Lake Michigan in 15 or 20 minutes. So it's not like horrible. So like right on the lake shore, like yesterday, they got like 18 inches in 2 days and we got 0. But there's other times like right next to the lake gets crushed. And by the time it gets out 20 miles, it's already dissipated. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
San Francisco,
we're
San Francisco?
No, I was going to say, like, we're close to all that stuff. I mean, like, I get to the Niagara River in about 10 minutes. I could get to Lake Ontario in, I don't know, 20.
I'm no expert on bodies of water, but I'm going to say the river probably doesn't have as much of an effect as, like, Lake Michigan.
No, but like, I could get to Lake Erie, where Buffalo is, in 40 minutes or so. Mm. But yeah, we don't get hit by it. What horrible lake effect snow does San Francisco have, John?
No, San Francisco is like 72 degrees all year round. In the winter, maybe it gets down to about 40 once in a while. Summer gets up to about 90, 92. It's like 100 degrees for one day a year, but 90% of the year, it's 75, 76, San Francisco, baby.
Is that where you want to go, John? That's the goal. Let's say you lived there for a while, right?
Egypt. I lived there for 7 years. Egypt, pretty much 80 degrees all the time, except during the day. Midday, it's like 110. Yeah, but in the evening, 80 degrees all the time.
So anywho,
let's take the Punk News Podcast to Egypt and just record there.
The Weather News Podcast.
Have we said anything that would get us in trouble in Egypt? I mean, I don't want to presume that we would, get in trouble in some other country just because, I'm assuming that, North America is so great and everything. But I have a feeling that we'd get in trouble for something we've said in Egypt.
Like people are like people sneaking the Punk News Podcast. They're like at risk of their life to listen to it if they get caught.
I've only said that Egypt is a beautiful place with wonderful, rich cultural history and wonderful
civilization.
That's all I said. Well, that's actually the Tigris and Euphrates.
Oh, see, now we're going to get in shit. Listen, we're going to go there, closer than, and they're going
to
be
closer
like,
to the cradle of civilization than freaking Buffalo and Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Buffalo Philadelphia, is the cradle.
The armpit of the East Coast.
Buffalo is where all the good in the world emanates from. So anyways.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? I just totally ripped on Philadelphia. Actually, I think it's
whatever. That's fine.
Just busting balls. Everybody knows New Jersey is the armpit of the East Coast.
As long as we leave Buffalo alone. I feel bad for them. I'm rooting for them. So
you can I'm gonna try to insult as many East Coast places as possible.
Buffalo had it rough, but it's great. I like Buffalo a lot. So anyways, okay, this is the Punkies podcast. We don't talk about random geography. We talk about things that happened in the past week on punknews.org and the wider world of music news and shit like that. So before we get going, we're going to talk about some mail. If you want to send us mail, it is podcast@punknews.org. That's how you get a hold of us. John, you have anything in the mailbag?
We did. You guys went shorty or longy first?
Surprises, John. Surprises.
All right, let's do longy first, then we'll do shorty. This is from Star F Raps, who's written before and is a regular Narmer Records cassette purchaser, and I thank you for that, Star F Raps. This is what Star F Raps says. Hello. I wish I wrote in more often, but rarely am able to find the time to do so. But this week I felt compelled to write in to reply to Liverpool Neil's mail from episode 378. He talked about the Double Door closing in Chicago due to gentrification, which is a bummer to hear. I'm unsure whether or not he's suggesting that this was the case for the Triple Rock, but either way, I thought I'd chime in as someone who lives in Minneapolis to clarify that this is not the case, or if it is, it is just the beginning. The true reason for the Triple Rock closing down remains unclear. I've heard rumors and murmurs from all around the scene, but none of them seem to hold much water, so I won't bother repeating them here. South Cedar in general, however, still remains an incredibly diverse area with many independently run businesses. Whatever happened, though, it's a damn shame, and I'm sad to see it go. I've spent many great nights there over the past 11 years of my life. I also want to address the issue of the audio desyncing for a portion of that episode. While it drove me a little crazy, I've come to expect a certain level of chaos in the Punk News podcast. However, this particular episode I was playing during a road trip to St. Louis to see AJJ with Fishboy. Fishboy, by the way, is an amazing band with an excellent live show. And my friends, who had never heard the podcast before, and he had no idea what was going on.
Picked up some new listeners, huh?
Ultimately, I skipped forward enough to find where it was fixed, and she ended up enjoying it, but it was amusing to have to explain, no, I swear this never happens. As I'm always on the lookout for cool record shops and pizza shops whenever I travel, I want to throw out a quick shout out to my finds in St. Louis for anyone who may be traveling through as well. I stopped at a decent little record shop on Cherokee Street called Dead Wax. I also hit up a pizza joint called Pizza Head, which featured a jukebox packed full of nothing but 70s and 80s era punk and classic punk show flyers on the walls. Apologies for the mega long email, but that last one bit is my own quick college tip, which is as follows. Don't be pressured to go to college right away if you're unsure of what you want to do. Too many of my friends kneecap themselves by doing this in life. I didn't start college until last year when I turned 26, but knowing exactly what I wanted to do and being excited about the idea of going to college, and it has made that experience much more rewarding. Of course, if you are pretty set on what you want to do out of high school, go for it. My experience and advice is only my own. Your mileage may vary. Thanks for the many hours of entertainment and news, guys. Keep up the good work. From Alex. And Alex included some photos from his St. Louis adventures. And if we have a webpage article with regard to this podcast, I will put those pictures in there.
Yeah. All right. So, don't play this show for other people. That makes me nervous. I don't know why.
Please play the show for other people.
Listen, I want to be famous. Play this show. Share this show. Tell all your friends.
I think that the three people that listen to this show and us have this intimate thing going on where they accept us for what we are, or they have Stockholm Syndrome or something, so they keep listening. And we don't have to deal with the harsh judgment of the rest of the world. Because what that person who listened to that to us fuck up in the car is going to say is she's going to turn to her friend there and say, this never happens on Serial. And... and it doesn't, and I'm sorry, but yeah, that college advice is good, and I wish that there was someone in my last year of high school that would have sat down and said to me, okay, here's the deal, all the marks or whatever that you need to get into college, that'll all still count if you do it in a couple years instead of doing it now. Because I think if I knew that, and that like that there was no like financial penalty aside, there was no penalty to me, you know, just going and living in the world for a little bit. I think I would have went and lived in the world for a little bit. I think honestly, I would have, you know, moved up to Toronto or something and just like, you know, bummed around in the art scene for a couple years. I mean, I don't know how I would have afforded that because you have to live, right? But whatever, I'd work in a grocery store and do that. So yeah, that's good advice. People should do that.
Okay, and this is from Tony T. And here's what Tony T has to say. I love listening to your record talk. I have a question about split releases. On Discogs, it will usually list a split release as having two artists. If it is three or more, it is usually listed as various artists. But I have seen three, four, and even five bands listed as a split release on Discogs. At what point does a release become a compilation instead of a split release? From Tony T.
If it's a full length, it's got to be a compilation. You could do like a four song EP.
In my head,
a split four song.
If there's more than one band on the thing, and those bands have more than one song each, then it is a split. So five bands, each of the five bands has two songs. Split.
Oh, I don't know, Adam. That's a full length record. That's a
five
full
bands.
Record.
Each of the bands has one song, and that's it. Not a split.
But that's a full length record if you got five bands with two songs each. You know, like if you buy a 7-inch with four songs, which used to be pretty common, I consider that a split. But I think four.
I think
four
split
is the
LPs,
most you
right?
can split. That's my definitive answer. But yeah, they're split LPs, but they'll have six tracks each.
See, I'll
say have six or eight tracks. Right? It's only two artists. It's kind of easy.
I'm saying three bands is the most you can have on a split release, and after that is a compilation.
I'm trying to think of an example of this.
You wouldn't call a four-band, seven-inch a compilation, would you? Or a various...
I actually might.
I'm trying to think of, like, an actual example of this in the world. And, like, two-band splits is easy. There's lots of those. I'm trying to think of
this
one that's floating around in my world that has more than
one. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's from the mid-90s. It's called Chicago versus Amsterdam or something. And it had a Bullweevils and an 88 Fingers Louie song on one side, and then maybe on the other side it had maybe an NRA song, and I don't remember the other band. But that was a four-song split.
See, I'm saying that's a compilation.
It's a compilation.
I'm saying to be a split, it's got to be something
you might
like,
as well just
like the blank and blank band split.
Three seems so arbitrary.
No, because there is a handful of like pop punk bands or something in the early 2000s that did these four way splits back at like the tail end of like the CD era. And I can't recall what any of them were, but I want to say that like, oh God, there was like a Chicago label that was doing that kind of thing. So I don't know. It really depends on like how the label's trying to sell it too, right? If the release has like a significant branding of its own, right? So like that thing that you talked about that was like,
it was Chicago versus Amsterdam or Chicago and Amsterdam,
right? So let's say you put out something called Chicago versus Amsterdam. I'm looking at that going, well, that's the whole theme of that record. So that record is Chicago versus Amsterdam. Like that's the thing. And there happens to be bands on it that help it, you know, meet that intent. But Chicago versus Amsterdam is what it is, right? As opposed to a split where, you know, there might not be any kind of weird overarching theme or anything like that. It's just that, like, you know,
two bands
these bands, you know, there are these bands, you know, wanted to collaborate on a thing. So it's all about intent, right? It's like it's that whole like, you know, is it art or porn?
EP versus LP?
No. The whole thing is this art or porn, right? Where you look at it.
I like how Adam was like, it's that whole thing. I'm like, oh, EP versus LP? And Adam's like, no,
yeah,
art versus porn.
No, like, you know, like it's partly an eye of the beholder, but partly the intent. So you'll have something that, you know, something that involves, you know, nudity or sexuality or anything like that. But, you know, if the intent of it is to make an artistic statement, it's going to potentially fall more into the, you know, okay, this is art category. But if the intent of it is that, you know, it's something for people to jack off to, well, then it's not that, right? It's porn. And it really depends what they mean it to be, I think.
H.R. Giger's Penis Landscape number 37, famously included in Dead Kennedy's Frankenstein.
And let's face it, right? When we were young, we used whatever was available to us.
I did not use fucking H.R. Geiger paintings. Let me tell you. Like,
but, oh my gosh, look at sexy Cthulhu. Yeah, I get that.
But that's a great example, right? Because if you looked at that and strictly looked at it from like an academic standpoint and go, you know, does it involve naked genitals? And you're going to go, yes. So you're okay. So it's porn, right? But it's an H.R. Geiger painting. It's art, right? It's fucking weird, but it's not porn. So it's that kind of thing. So really,
Michelangelo's David, art or porn?
Neither.
So the answer to this really is how many penises are involved in the multiband split? And
one penis is based art. On one that, penis is art. More than that is porn.
See, I'd make like, because the penis landscape has got like 40 it's penises. Like one after another. What I mean is like,
I mean, too it's many just hundreds of them. I bet. How many penises are there?
You can always reach that podcast at bugnews.org. Okay.
Yeah, if someone could count the penises in Penis Landscape and send us in that number, then we'll run it next time. all right. So, anyways,
no, it is absolutely right, because of me. I just think it's funny that the guy's first letter was like,
well, not because of
about
Tom,
how we always Tom. Have technical
because Microsoft
flare levels, like, you don't even know
it's Skype.
It. We're like, it took me a half hour to get my shit up and running. Oh well. We'll try to give it a little extra effort. Yeah, no, it's.
Well, that happened to us last week too. So, yeah, the trials and tribulations of new Skype are continuing to weigh upon the Punk News podcast. So I'm going to skip doing a song right now. Let's jump right into this and talk about some news that happened that doesn't involve penises. Well, I mean, it might. So the Punk Rock Bowling lineup has been announced for this year. So first of all, this is just Vegas this year, back to its roots, back to where it is, not doing Asbury Park or anything on the East Coast anymore. So this is the lineup for Punk Rock Bowling, which is going to be taking place on May 25th to 28th in Las Vegas. So the headliners on this thing are, we're judging headliners based upon the usual way which we judge them, which is they're in a bigger font than everyone else on the poster. Rise Against, NOFX, and At the Drive-In. Then the other bands right now that are on this poster, and I'm just going to list them off for you. There are two, by the way, very prominent sets of question marks at the top of this. So there's a couple bands that haven't been listed yet. But you have the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Against Me, Turbo Negro, L7, Steve Ignorant and the Paranoid Visions doing crass stuff, GBH, The Partisans, Angelic Upstarts, The Marked Men, The Briefs, the UK band Slaves, Swingin' Utters, DOA, Larry and His Flask, Noise. I don't know how you pronounce
it's
that.
Just, it's
this
just
has come
noise.
Up on the podcast yeah. before. How do you pronounce
it's just
this?
Noise.
Like, it's
I believe it's noise.
It's just noise, but they wrote like oi with an exclamation mark in the middle, which makes it look like there's two eyes, which I just want to do it differently. Resistance 77, Buster Shuffle, Crazy in the Brains, The Birth Defects, The Atom Age, and Father Figures. So that's the lineup right now for the 20th anniversary Punk Rock Bowling. So there's a couple angles we can take this from, but I guess we got to start with the internet, which is to say the weird little chat room that people who write for Punk News hang out in were not too keen on this headliner lineup. It caused some friction. People were at each other's throats. I can get into why, but what's your reaction to this initially, John?
Well, you know, they're making a big deal out of being Punk Rock Bowling's. Is this the 10th year or the 20th year?
20th.
10th year, right?
20th.
20th year. Well, that's pretty good. They were making a big deal about the 20th year, and I'm thinking, all right, man, they're going to, like, honestly, Iggy Pop would be the perfect headliner for the 20th year, the godfather of punk. It's 20 years of Punk Rock Bowling.
Well, he did last year, though.
That's what I'm saying, Tom.
Well, I know, but they're not going to have twos in a row.
Right? What I'm saying is it would have made more sense to have him this year, Tom.
Well, maybe he has a busy schedule in 2018. He's unable to be there.
So anyways, the point being is that, like, it's like, you know, I kind of expect kind of, I don't know, a seminal punk band, you know what I mean?
More old school, yeah, definitely.
You know, NoFX is, you know, no, it's cool that NoFX is there, but they headlined...
No, NoFX fits.
They headlined Asbury Park last year, you know what I mean? And also, like, when I think of punk, I don't think of At The Drive, and I don't even really think of Rise Against. I understand that they're trying to, you know, sell tickets, but I don't even know, I mean, is At The Drive in a huge draw, like, at all, you know? I don't know,
Not for people my age, it isn't, and this really seems to cater to the older crowd generally.
I'm
perplexed too. Rise Against, they generally stay away from those like hyper political type of.
I was a little underwhelmed by this. There are a couple of things that I'm really Crazy in the Brain. I'd love to see that. Also, Steve Ignorant and Paranoid Vision doing Crass. I guess that's. Actually, I'm surprised at how non-controversial that was, because if people recall, I think it was 2010 or 2012, Steve Ignorant toured as The Last Supper and did all Crass songs, and it was awesome. It was so awesome. He put out two live albums from that tour, and it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. But people were saying, oh, Steve shouldn't be playing Crass. Even Penny Rimbaud at first said it was lame, but then Penny Rimbaud changed his mind, said it was okay because he wrote some of the songs, so it was fair. But Steve Ignorant said he was never going to do Crass songs again, and now he's kind of doing Crass songs again, and I'm not against it. It was awesome when he did it before. I'd love to see it again. I guess I'm just a little curious about the decision to do that, but also I am surprised that no one's raising a hissy fit this time like they did 7 years. Like when I went to see Steve Ignorant do Crass songs 7 years ago, there was literally protesters outside. You know, this doesn't seem like people really care anymore. I don't know. Maybe people just don't care about Crass as much anymore. And also, I kind of think that should be a headliner, to tell you the truth.
Well, I think that, I mean, the reason they're not a headliner is the same reason that is that no one cares. And that is that I don't think that many people care about Crass these days, which is not to insult Crass or anything like that. But they were, the fact that they were such a, like a hard nut to crack as a band, and were so, you know, like iconoclastic and dedicated to their politics and everything like that. All those same features that people hold up Crass as one of these like politically ideal bands is also the reason why I think like a lot of kids these days don't give a lot of shit about Crass, right? I mean, the reason why everyone back in the you know 70s and 80s would have criticized the Clash, which is that, oh well, you know, they're way too commercial really for the amount of you know for the amount of politicking that they claim to be doing, all the sloganeering. Well, you know, 40 years later, that's the stuff that, you know, is still grabbing kids. Like the fact that they have merchandised the shit out of the Clash is allowing a lot of people these days to get into them who are young people, where it's a lot harder to get into Crass, right? Like you got to really go down an internet rabbit hole at this point to really get into Crass. Whereas the Clash, you're going to go into your, you know, any fucking Hot Topic and they're going to, you know, school you on it. So, you know, that's,
You feel as though Crass is an obscure band these days? I never felt that way, but maybe you're right now.
I think, to the kids.
I'd say they're pretty obscure.
Yeah. I'm looking at this lineup and I have less of a problem with it than some people, but only because I'm making the, at least as far as the top of the lineup goes, I'm making a bit of the Epitaph Records judgment on this, which is to say, you know what? Like, I'm not really into some of these bands, but I get that a lot of people are, and they're going to bring people in the door, and that's going to help pay for, you know, everything else that's going on, right? Because, you know, no one's going to show up to go see, you know, DOA and L7, but they're going to show up to see At The Drive-In, and that's going to help, you know, get, you know, butts in the seats, get tickets sold. There's not going to be seats, but you know what I mean, right? Get tickets sold and help, you know, fund the whole thing. So, you know, I can accept that, I guess. It does seem strange to me to see At The Drive-In at the top of this, though. It doesn't make me angry. It's just that I never thought that, like, this would be their scene. And I never quite get what is that band's place? Because it seemed for a lot of years that they were, you know, while the punk scene really embraced what was it, Relationship of Command and the One Arm Scissor single and all that when it came out. These guys were all pretty quick to, you know, get the fuck out of this scene and go record prog rock somewhere. So playing something like this, which is just like so overtly a punk festival, in my head doesn't seem like something that would be their thing. But hey, I don't know. The pay might be good, and that's why they're doing it. Rise Against, like, I was into Rise Against for a time. They started recording stuff that was a little bit more radio than I was happy with, and I just sort of stopped. But I've got to imagine that all the guys in that band, you know, that they came out of this scene, they're still, you know, probably friendly with a lot of people that are in it. So their success aside, you know, I don't have a particular problem with them being on the top of this. Like, I can see why they'd be a draw. So, yeah, that's all right. I mean, I'm looking at this and saying a lot of these bands that are in the non-headlining position on this actually have a nice history with Punk Rock Bowling. Like, a lot of these bands are bands that have played in years past. So if you're doing a 20-year thing, it kind of fits. There's a poster on my wall right now from Punk Rock Bowling 7 that has Swingin' Utters and The Briefs on it. So, you know, those guys played that. NOFX, either NOFX or The Gimmies, have played, you know, tons of these things. So all that kind of fits. Turbo Negra's played them before. Against Me's played them before. So, like, all that feels, you know, kind of suitable. Like, those are the kind of bands that I would expect to see on this. You know, not that I think I'm going to be there or anything, but like Mighty Mighty Boston seems super fun to me, so that's cool. So I don't know. I don't have a super problem with this. I would, if I were to go to this festival and not watch Rise Against or At the Drive-In, there was still a lot of stuff that I would want to go see. So that doesn't bother me at all. The thing that people should be excited about, and no one seems to be talking about, is that you have a festival that has the fucking Marked Men and The Briefs at it. And listed together on the poster, which makes me, you know, wildly speculate that those performances are going to be somehow close to each other, or maybe the same club show or something. So, like, that's cool. That I'm into that.
I think there's some good stuff in the middle. The bands that caught my eye the most, actually, I would love to see L7. I never saw them back in the day. And GBH, where the middle section, like Angelic Upstarts, was some cool stuff. But yeah, I think they kind of missed the mark, because this has kind of become the last bastion. You know, Riot Fest, when it first started out, had a real like old school punk rock kind of thing going on. But they've kind of abandoned that too. And I'm like, oh no, not Punk Rock Bowling. I'm sorry, Rise Against can't replace Coxbar. It just doesn't work.
I was going to say,
like, part of the reason I wouldn't be mad about this, even if it was the one that was near me, is that like, it's like going to see the headliner and anything fucking sucks anyways. So like,
That's true.
The bands that are in the middle are the ones that you're going to be able to go see probably up close, probably in a bit of a more intimate setting.
But is there enough there to justify the three day concert or whatever? I don't know if it's two or three days, but is there enough there for that? I don't know how people
do punk rock bowling these days. And I'm going to like name drop again, but. I mean, I'm sorry, but I've been there a bunch of times. So, but when we did it, like, we bowled. So, like, we entered teams in the tournament. So, one or two days, depending of how good or bad we are, 1 or 2 days we were bowling for a good portion of the day. And then the rest of the time we were, playing a lot of blackjack. So, like, there was a big appeal to it being, this is why I never quite got the jersey version of it, because to us it was sort of like, well, A, you're going to bowl, I guess you can bowl in Jersey, but B, we were going to bowl and then, like, you know, gamble and do Vegas stuff. So from a, you know, as a tourist going to Vegas, the show was just like an aspect of it, and then the rest of it was just sort of all the stuff you'd use to fill your time. I get a feeling that the way it works these days is it's more of like a proper music festival with like a gate and a stage and all that stuff. So, you know, I don't know if I could go stand in a field for 3 days and, you know, watch enough of these bands to make it worthwhile, but I don't know how people do it.
Yeah. The older I get, I'm definitely more a fan of the single day festival. Because I could still kind of tear it up, you know, like an old country, like a country western song, you know, I can still tear it up for like short periods of time.
I bet you with your alligator boots but if I have on to, and you're just.
Do it for, exactly. But if I have to do like 3 days in a row, it gets pretty ragged, you know. I need a nap.
I will say, man, Steve Ignorant does Crass and Crazy in the Brains. If you want a John G style festival, there it is. You know what I mean? But
did either of you guys happen to see there's a new L7 documentary, and I was never like the world's biggest L7 fan necessarily, but there's a new documentary and it just popped up on Hulu. So I watched it. It's called Pretend We're Dead. And it's really fascinating. I would give that a watch if I were you. Give you a newfound appreciation for that band. I know they kind of got lumped in with the grunge thing, and they were, but they were, man, they tore it up punk rock style when they were.
There is a handful of like Riot Girl related documentaries that Netflix keeps telling me to watch, and I haven't yet. And I think I've got like three of them in a list at this point.
I just never got to see them back in the day. Matter of fact, I was like, oh, they played Lollapalooza. Was that a Lollapalooza I was at? But it wasn't. I went to the first three. They actually played the fourth one. But anyway, I think they would be cool to see. And I think people would really, they play like insane. Like they play so hard. I mean, they kick ass. But yeah, like I said, GBH, there's a few things in the middle, but yeah, it's, I mean, you know, I like Against Me, but I've seen them a bunch of times. I really don't care for Rise Against, but I've seen them a bunch of times. At the Drive-In, no thanks. No Effects would be cool, especially at a show like that, because No Effects shows are really hit and miss, whether or not
really
hit or good.
Last year at Asbury Park, but it kind of
works both ways. Yeah, well, and that's what Ricky, I remember, said one of his reviews, like, I've seen No Effects four times now, they've been great every time. I'm like, wow, that is that's astronomical odds. Yeah. That every time would be great.
I don't know. Like four times, I think this lineup is fine. It's fine. I'm not.
If money were no object, I would definitely be out there. But, you know, I got to fly out and 3-4 nights in a hotel. It's pretty expensive. And I there's not. I kind of need a gotcha band to spend that kind of money.
Yeah, like a Misfits.
It's not pride. Yeah, something like that. Or, you know, I'd probably have to bring my wife. You know, it costs me a lot of money. Potentially. So, yeah, there's nothing. There's just nothing to, maybe one of those question marks.
Maybe. I mean, Misfits would fit in there.
Misfits aren't doing it, John. It's not going to be the Misfits.
Not only that, is on Instagram, Doyle said that he wasn't going to do any more Misfits shows. So
who said
Doyle
that?
On Instagram said that there's probably not going to be any more Misfits shows after that, the New Year's Eve show.
Yeah, bull. Jerry and Doyle will always need the money.
Yeah, but, well, Glenn, that's the question.
I don't know. I think he wants to retire, so yes, I think he'll do it for the money. I don't know. We'll see. I'm sad that I haven't got a chance to see him, but, man, talk about a great deal of expense. Man.
So, moving on.
Anyway.
It'd
be cool. If I hit the numbers,
I mean, if anyone wants to pay for us all to go, we'll take your money.
we'll go, yeah.
So the next thing I want to talk about here, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has gone and announced its 2018 inductees. The list here includes one Mr. Bon Jovi, and he's leading the pack, apparently fueled by a massive amount of fan voting. Also getting in this year, The Cars, Dire Straits, The Moody Blues, and Nina Simone. Gospel pioneer Sister Rosetta Tharpe was also chosen to receive the award for early influence. So bands that were nominated that did not make the cut include Kate Bush, Depeche Mode, Eurythmics, Jay Giles Band, Judas Priest, LL Cool J, The MC5, Meteors, Radiohead, Rage Against the Machine, Rufus featuring Chaka Khan, Link Ray, and the Zombies. So that's everyone that didn't get in, but will presumably be nominated in future years.
Judas Priest, Adam. Judas Priest did not get in.
They're not in this. Oh, I did.
I don't think you said them. I don't think you said it. Did he say it?
I think he did say Judas Priest. I think he did.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So fuck off. Anyways, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to take place on the 14th of April in Cleveland, where the Rock Hall is. John, this is one of these stories that I read it, and I had zero reaction to anything. So what do you think?
Well, First of all, again, my predictions were way, way off. The only prediction I got right, I think, was the cars. Second is, as we said this before, I'll say it again, is more than ever, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame seems to be confused if it wants to be the sold a lot of records club or the good music club. Because on either metric, they missed the mark on both sides here. Like, if they want to be the sold a lot of records club, I think Radiohead and even Rage has sold more than Bon Jovi. If they want to be the good music club, then Bon Jovi sucks, man.
Oh, you are high. You are high, John. Slippery When Wet and New Jersey back-to-back. Bon Jovi has sold over 20 million albums in the U.S. Radiohead has sold Buck Kiss. Radiohead is a critic favorite. I bet you they don't have more than two platinum albums. I bet you they haven't sold 10 million copies in America. Totally. Bon Jovi is huge.
So,
dude.
Bon Jovi.
I mean, they suck, but they're huge.
Bon Jovi's pretty terrible. And as
apparently, a lot of 40-year-old white women voted.
As for the other picks, like Dire Straits, Moody Blues, like in the comment section, people were like fighting, like, yeah, Dire Straits sucks. You know what I mean? And if they don't suck, then they're just okay. Same with the Moody. Like, Moody Blues are fine, but like compared to like the MC5 or Judas Priest really should have got in because.
There's two.
Judas Priest really should have got in because they would have been a killer live show. Like, Bon Jovi just so limp. And so it just goes to show that.
The fact that MC5 isn't in there is ridiculous, honestly.
It just goes to show how.
They were so influential.
It just goes to show how the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, is. I don't know if they're struggling or if they can't figure out what they want to do or, like, the fan vote was a bad. Like, I can't believe people actually voted for Bon Jovi. I mean, I can because he's Bon Jovi. But, like it just goes to show that democracy doesn't work because Bon Jovi got in through the fan vote, which is ridiculous. Anyways.
Well, it's mob rule at that point. But there's two bands you mentioned. One of them was Depeche Mode, and the other one is Judas Priest. Those, talk about influential bands. Bands that helped define their respective genres. Probably more Judas Priest than Depeche Mode. But, I mean, how are the Zombies and Link Ray not in? And freaking Madonna's in.
Is Madonna in?
Like you said, John. Last year, I think. But it's like, I think it was you that said last year, because I was on last year when we talked about this. It's the Popular Music Hall of Fame. It's not the Rock and Roll Hall.
But see, like,
it's like Adam talking about pornography. I might not be able to define it, but I know what it is when I hear it. And some of this shit.
You know what, Tom? You hit a salient point, and, you know, with Dire Straits and with Moody Blues, I think they're trying to make. In reality, they are the a lot of records sold club, but through the Moody Blues, through Dire Straits, they're trying to mask it and say, oh no, we're the good music club, but it's just too weak of a selection to prove that. You know what I mean? Like, Joy Division should be in before, you know, Moody Blues, you know.
Oh, you think Moody Blues is like their attempt at being edgy?
Not edgy.
Nights in White Satin?
Not edgy, but I think, you know, the album Nights in White Satin is considered a landmark album. I mean, I think it's boring as hell, but it's considered a landmark album. Same with Dire Straits. Like, people that like Dire Straits, they're like, but the playing is so good. Their technique is so good. It's like, yeah, but the music is boring as hell, you know?
Yeah, Mark Knopf was considered a really great
Tom, this is gonna blow your mind a little bit. This is
Adam's like, I am Mark Knopf.
So, no,
he pulled out his guitar.
This is some quick Wikipedia math. I don't know if it's quite right, but
oh my gosh, Slippery When Wet sold 28 million copies, John.
Okay.
Bon Jovi's Slippery When Wet album came out in 1986 when I was in junior high. It was a very popular album. Sold 28 million copies worldwide. That's like Eagles.
The Radiohead, number of times platinum in the U.S. based on my quick little math here. Of across all their albums. Number of times platinum in the U.S. 5. Judas Priest, number of times platinum in the U.S.
I'll guess 14.
6.
12.
Now, what I'm trying to figure out here is, there's platinum in other countries, but it's not the same. So I'm trying not to count that.
Yeah. No, in Canada, you only have to sell like
Canada, you can sell like 45 right? copies of a record.
Or 100,000 or something.
But I've got this feeling that, like, and it may not be showing up here, but I have a feeling that, like, there's probably some, like, compilation greatest hits Judas Priest thing that's, like, a million times platinum that I'm not aware of.
There's a couple, but I don't think there's a definitive one that's, it's not like that. Not like Eagles Greatest Hits or something where it's literally sold, like, 15 million copies of its own or 20 million copies. No.
Anywho, so...
Same thing with Bon Jovi. Well, there's no definitive greatest hits on my
I mean, but Bon Jovi outsells out whatever's all of these people, right? So, which is why they won. So how does the voting on this work, John? Is this like a clicker poll? Could you go onto the internet and just like every day click?
The answer is yes, you can. And here's how it works. The official pollers is a selection of 100 people pulled from bands, journalism, and record labels and different things. Then the fan vote also gets a weight in addition to the 100 other votes, if you will. But they're secretive about how much effect the fan vote actually has. Also, the fan vote, you can, and they encourage you to vote every day. So, like, what's the point, you know? Who cares? Bon Jovi sucks. I mean, really, this is just like a pull. Like I don't know what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is hoping to get out of this. Like if they want people to come to the thing, are Bon Jovi fans really going to come in? Are Bon Jovi fans really going to fly out there and watch us and buy rock and roll merchandise? Yes. You know, you think
Bon Jovi fans? Yes.
Apparently.
If I understand anything about Bon Jovi fans.
Have you ever been to Cleveland, John?
Yeah, I've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
It's not that great, and there's not that much to do. So you would go there, yes.
Like
I'm saying, like...
No, we're going to talk over each other for this whole episode. It's going to make everyone love this. Don't play this episode to the person in your car. Holy fuck. I don't know.
Maybe it'll get out of sync, and we won't be talking over each other.
That's why we do it. I don't know. My stereotype about Bon Jovi fans is that they are totally the kind of people that would... you know, spend gobs of money to go to a Bon Jovi exhibit in another city and then buy the t-shirt.
I can tell you exactly what a Bon Jovi fan is, guys. It is women my age. That's who buys the record. That's Bon Jovi is very, very popular with 40-year-old white women. I may even
that
would have
been
one.
Way better.
I'm telling you, that's the God's honest truth.
I'll tell you who a Bon Jovi fan is, and then you tore your shirt in half for the giant chest tattoo that you wouldn't be able to see over the podcast. But
I've seen Bon Jovi.
Oh, he's so bad. He's so shitty.
I have a friend who worked for the major paper here in town, and so he used to review all the big shows at the arena, and I was often his date. I mean, I saw literally hundreds of shows for free, honestly. But yeah, I went and saw Bon Jovi.
So bad. So terrible.
It was. I don't remember much about it. I mean, I don't remember thinking it was, like, horrible, but I don't remember, you know. I don't know. I wasn't living on a prayer or giving love a bad name.
But on a steel horse, you do ride. So we're going to jump to another story here, and this one is probably about someone worse than Bon Jovi. But John, you had a lot to say about this one. But how do we approach it? How do we summarize this one?
Well, I've been following this story a lot, so I'll just do and I've been getting flack in the comment section about following this story. I don't know how, as a punk fan, as an alt music fan, as an intelligent human being, you couldn't be interested in this story. So the LA Weekly, about 2 weeks ago, sold to a new company called Seminole Media. No one knew who the owners was. After some, basically after pressure, the owners revealed themselves to be a cabal of conservative, very conservative, real property investors. The guy that was basically handling the buyout was a guy called Brian Call or Brian Cali, who is part of a thing called the Claremont Institute, whose mission statement is to defeat progressivism and install conservative people in places of power and influence, which sounds insidious off the bat. Meanwhile, the LA Weekly fired all of its editorial staff and all but one of its staff writers. The one staff writer they didn't fire was a guy called Hillel Aaron. Hillel Aaron is now the new interim editor-in-chief for LA Weekly. Right now they have no editors, no writers, except for this guy, Hillel Aaron, and they did do a call out asking for free contributions. Meanwhile, Henry Rollins quit the paper. Amoeba Records said, we're not going to advertise with you anymore. So LA Weekly is sort of in a state of crisis, and we're going to talk about the meat of the matter in a second, but not enough people, maybe just that I'm a naive little puppy dog, but this is a attempted secretive takeover of a left-leaning paper to a far-right reactionary group of people that wanted to seem that it was still left, being run by a guy whose, quote, mission statement it is to secretly install people in power with conservative viewpoints. The whole thing seems very sneaky and sinister, if you will. Like, why not be upfront about it unless you're trying to be devious and sinister? People didn't seem to care about this, but this seemed to be very disconcerting to me. Anyways, the new editor is this guy called Hillel Aaron, and as soon as he was installed as the interim editor, people did a checking into his background. Well, they looked at his old tweet history, and you know, as Johnny Cash says, your tweets will bring you down every time. Here are just some of Hillel Aaron's tweets, and this is me quoting Hillel Aaron's tweets. They should have AIDS Walk, Gay Pride, Ciclavia, Carmageddon, and the marathon on the same day to get all the bullshit out in one fell swoop. Another tweet. Is it gay to send a Farmville Valentine's gift to a dude? You're right. Best to stick with chicks to be safe. Here's another tweet. Currently experiencing the banality of poor people. Here's another tweet. Crazy hot girl with weird deformed arm. I am so confused. Here's another tweet. No ticket. Maybe gays aren't all bad. And here's a real classy one. Trying out this new transcription software. First interview was a black guy and it completely failed. Seems better than the white guy. Seems better with the white guy. And so this guy's a real winner, and he's a real thoughtful, intelligent person. So he issued a statement that basically saying, these tweets were bad attempts at humor, yada, yada, yada. And then he uses the two of the three paragraphs of his apology to attack other people and claim why he's the victim. So here's the thing with this is it fair to dig back in this guy's Twitter history from 10 years ago? Some of these tweets are 10 years ago. Some of these are 7 years ago. At the time, I don't know how old he was. Now he looks like he's 25 or 30. So he would have been about 15, 16, 17 tweeting out these offensive things. So is it fair to dig up a dirt in someone's history when they're 16, 17, 18? Is it fair to dig up 10-year-old dirt? Or should this guy get a pass? And LA Weekly, is it somewhat comforting that it appears to have been a secretive takeover with sinister motives, but it seems to be failing horribly? Is that comforting? Comforting.
So,
and also, this guy's an asshole. I mean, like,
that's a couple of questions, and I got to tell you honestly, I am so glad that a lot of this technology didn't exist when I was young, because if you had a written document of all the stupid things I said over the years, I would probably have to kill myself if, you know, my mother were able to read them or whatever. So I'm tempted to want to give a little bit of a pass there, but yeah, it's pretty stupid stuff. And unless he's proven that he's somehow redeemed himself from that, he's going to have a very difficult time.
I had that same feeling where I'm like, but I was more approaching it from the fact that, like, if you're going to be a, like, if you're a teenager, you're 15, 16 or something like that, you have enough agency that it can be explained to you that the things that you say online could be there forever. You can understand that. And you have enough self-awareness to say, to know whether the thing that you're about to utter into the world is, you know, fiery or not, right? Like, you know the kind of shit that's going to come bite you in the ass, and I don't buy that you don't at that age, which is more of a reason. But I get that kids are like that. So my argument would be that, like, you know, if you're that young, go be an asshole in person to someone. Don't go document your teenage assholeness, because that in and of itself is a poor choice. But the one thing that I have no problem with at all is the whole going back 10 years to find something. Because this just happened here in local politics in the city where I'm in, where there's someone that was trying to, like, run for political office from my city, and they went and they dug up some pretty grossly racist, like, Halloween costumes that he was involved in 10 years ago, and there were, like, pictures on Facebook of and all this. And it basically sunk his bid to kind of to get into this primary. But then in the article that was in our local paper, he was trying to apologize away from it. Something he said was, and this just drives me nuts, is he said something along the lines of, like, oh, well, it was 10 years ago. Things weren't as racially charged as they are now. I'm like, what? Like, fuck you. 10 years ago was, like, 2000 and what? 2007. The world was pretty much the same as the world is now. Shit that was racist then was also racist now, right? And I think the same...
It's 1957 or something.
My example when I was talking about it with people was like, it's not like you can look at like a Disney cartoon from the 40s and go, well, okay, that's kind of racist, but it was a different time, right? Like, you know, that... You can't make that argument about stuff that you said 10 or 15 years ago on the internet, right? So this stuff that all looks... you know, homophobic or whatever. It was fucking homophobic or whatever 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And it was the same in that local situation here. And it's the same as this. So I don't think like the passage of time matters. Like there's no statute of limitations on you being an asshole. Right. So that's valid. I say that's valid criticism. It's a valid thing to go look for.
I agree with all that. You know, when you're 15, you know, if you're 7 or 8, you say some bullshit stuff while you're 7 or 8. Time you're 15 or 16, especially a 15 or 16 year old in 2007, 2008, that's not the same as a 15 or 16 year old in 1982, 1983, you know?
But you, when you're that age, don't you just say things to be shocking?
You say it to your dumb shit friends in the back of a K car. You don't say it, you know, on this publicly documented.
Well, yeah. I was well grown before I had a phone, you know, before I had a cell phone. So I never had to deal with any of that crap. But yeah, no, I get that.
And as always, you know, this guy's really fixating on the gay thing. And I always question people that like wake up and start thinking about how much they hate gay people, like the first thing in the morning or all day long.
Like thou doth protest too much. Jim.
That's what I'm saying. You know, and there's nothing wrong with being gay, but there is something wrong with being closeted gay and then attacking gay people because you're not comfortable with yourself. And you know, with these super religious guys, you know, they're always like, he's like, you know, we hate gay people, we hate gay people, and then they get caught getting blown by some guy in an airport bathroom. You know what I mean? It's like, well, maybe there is a reason you think about gay people so much. You know, so that's what I'm saying here. You know, I'm just saying maybe. I'm saying, be yourself, Adam. Be yourself. Be your best.
Like outside of that, I think your read on all this is. You know, pretty accurate. I mean, it totally, you know, appears to be a, you know, conservative minded media group trying to walk in and pick up what was formerly a liberal arts paper and make it into something that's not. I guess the only thing that we haven't seen yet is we haven't necessarily seen the we haven't seen the evidence of what they're trying to accomplish. We've just seen them, you know, cleaning house and trying to get people to do free freelance work for them. So I like the proof's going to be,
are they crashing and burning, you think, or is this part of the plan?
I mean, I don't know. Like if you wanted to kill the paper, you could totally just buy it and kill it. Like you didn't need to buy it and then fuck it up a lot. Right. There's
tell that to the president.
I wonder if it was at all profitable. You know what I mean? Was it losing money?
You can't believe anybody.
How many of these? I mean, didn't the Village Voice stop? I mean, a lot of these long running papers have stopped. I wonder if they just bought it for next to nothing and thought they'd take a stab at all the political stuff aside. I mean, this business plan is this you know, punk news type business plan they got going here. I guess the issue here
is that like an arts paper is going to be far more, you know, reputation based and sensitive to what the actual artists that they're covering think than would just like a general purpose, you know, broadsheet newspaper. So you could say, like, let's say some secret conservatives came in and purchased, you know, the Washington Post from Jeff, and then they started, you know, parachuting in people that had their opinions into the newsroom and into the editorial board and all this, that, and the other, and you start to slant the coverage of the paper. Like that's one thing. And that's the insidious way of doing it. I don't get what the end game is. If you're going to like buy LA Weekly, publicly fire everyone, make the big mouth celebrities that write for you, like Henry Rollins, quit. And then take people that have like this like super sketchy problematic history and promote them into positions of power. Like it all looks like that's not sneaky and clandestine. That's just bumbling around. So whatever their strategy is there, I don't think it's all that clever.
Well, maybe they didn't think it was going to cause such an uproar. You know, maybe they just thought they could kind of slide in there, and it has backfired. I can't imagine this is their business plan. I mean, we've all heard the, we've all heard that all publicity is good publicity, but yeah, this is not good publicity.
I imagine our business plan is we're going to go in and fire everybody, and then our secret cabal will get exposed, and then we'll put an editor in the power who's extremely homophobic, suspiciously so. Sounds like a business plan, guys. Let's do it.
I mean, they get away from it if it wasn't for this John Gentile that keeps yelling at them.
Well, listen.
Yeah. If it wasn't for you meddling kids.
I'm going to play a song right now because, Tom, you hit it on the button. This is a song by the Archies, and I actually have the Archies' greatest hit CD. I got it for $3, and I've been enjoying it quite a bit. It's got the song Sugar Sugar, which I love the song Sugar Sugar. Little did I know it's got a song called Scooby-Doo on it, and I'm not even –
Oh, are they the ones who did that original theme song?
No. People are going to think this is like a fake song or a parody. This is a real song by the group The Archies, which was a group licensed from the Archie comic book series. This song is called Scooby-Doo, and I'm not even kidding you. It's about how Archie wants to have sex with Scooby-Doo. And I'm sure Tom will know. You know, Tom, in like a whole lot of Love by Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant starts making certain noises, you know? Archie makes those sounds in this song, and I have no idea what's going on in this song about Archie saying he wants to have sex with Scooby-Doo. I actually do know what's going on, but we're not going to get into it. So we're just going to take this song at face value. This is Scooby-Doo by the Archies, in which Archie sings that he wants to have sex with Scooby-Doo. Enjoy.
So the Scooby-Doo theme song was composed by a guy named Ben Raleigh. And interestingly, the Hanna-Barbera tried to buy him out of the rights to that song, but he declined that and instead chose a royalty. So I wonder if that worked out for him.
Smart move.
He actually died in a kitchen fire in 1997.
Rich as balls. You know, that's not where I expected us to go coming out of that song. I figured we'd be like, you know, in this these troubled times we live in where you can't hardly find a prominent person in Hollywood or a politician who's not being accused of sexual assault. We'd like to get away with that with a song about bestiality.
I didn't write it.
You're propagating it. I mean, it's just so funny because all that stuff is so innocent. You know, that music from that era has a certain innocence to it, like the pre or the non, you know, British invasion.
I'm listening to the CD. I'm like, sugar, sugar, doo 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 doo. Oh, honey. And then, I'm like, what the hell is this? He's like, Scooby Doo, I love you. I'm like, what the hell is this?
I mean,
listen.
If you ask me.
What a man does with his dog in the privacy of his own home.
Scooby Doo's got more more of a human like consciousness. I think he can consent.
You think? He's like, he has the, like, reasoning of like a three-year-old.
He is a man in a dog body. He can consent. He's not like fucking Lassie. Lassie can't consent.
Adam, what's the age?
Oh, please. Lassie can say yes and no and count with a
paw. What's the age of consent for a dog? Is it 2.5 or 18?
Let's see. 7 years for 1 year.
We're going to get in trouble. Okay. We should keep going. There's a bunch of other stories. I don't know which one you want to talk about in particular because it's getting late. Which of these strikes your fancy, John?
I only care about the last one. We can just, I don't know. Let's talk about...
I lost my list.
Jawbreaker, they re-released their first demo. A lot of people love Jawbreaker. People didn't see this coming. Jawbreaker recently reunited. Do you guys care about Jawbreaker releasing the demo? The original demo?
I don't, but I'm sure a lot of people do.
The one thing that I wasn't sure about with this re-release is how it was being re-released. Like, are they...
Just digital.
So yeah, digital. Knock yourself out. I'm all for bands putting their shit online. Does anybody need to go buy a fucking like pressed in 2017 LP that has the Jawbreaker demo on it? No, probably not.
Well, I'm sure it was on cassette. Yeah.
So
originally.
I mean, if it's just a you know, no one was consuming this thing. It exists. We're gonna put it online so our fans can check it out. I'm all for that. It feels a little weird sometimes when this music is when this kind of like early demo stuff gets packaged up and prettified and put out as a, you know, as a proper record because I want you to go spend $20 on it. Not as cool with that, but hey, you know what? If it's a fucking digital demo you're going to put on Bandcamp, do it. That's cool. I'm down. And yeah, confirming here, you can go buy it. You can buy it for $5 on Bandcamp. And holy shit, tons and tons of people have bought it. So there you go.
How many songs?
7.
Hmm.
So there you go. I'm cool with that. That's fine. I'm in. Any of those other stories here, John, that...
I only care about the last one. You want me to hit the last one or you want to hit any of the others?
Yeah, you know what, John? This last one is a big one for you. Why don't you take that and run with it?
All right, let's just hit this is probably my biggest article and my most researched article of the year. I interviewed Jello Biafra. Actually, I interviewed him once over a 3-hour span, but we broke it up into 2 interviews. The first interview was Jello Biafra walks us through his discography, wherein he talked about pretty much every single one of his albums and just a little bit about what was going on, the background behind that album, and some fun facts. I also interviewed him for a profile, and basically the angle of the profile is what makes Jello Biafra be Jello Biafra, because he is somewhat of a mysterious figure. It's hard to get a line on Jello Biafra. It's hard to understand what he's thinking. Like when you're talking with Blagged Out or Keith Morris, you know when they're happy, you know when they're upset, you know when they're having fun. Buzz Osborne too. Jello is much more cagey to agree. It's hard to tell if Jello Biafra is angry, happy, sad, or is he just calculating what he's saying to you. what makes up Jello Biafra? How does Jello Biafra feel deep down inside? So I put together a 7,000-word interview, which is one of my longest interviews I've ever done. I also interviewed Dom Dive of Alternative Tentacles, Jesse Lust of Alternative Tentacles, Ralph Spite of Jello's band, and also Melanie K of Melanie K PR, who is Jello's Canadian PR and sometimes is USA PR too. We talked about his early childhood. We talked about starting with Dead Kennedys. We talked about him talking to Will Shatter, a flipper, and deciding to start a band. And basically, oh, and also his early musical influences like Paul Revere and the Raiders. And it basically finished up with basically what Jello thinks about himself, what he thinks about his record label, and what people think about him. And honestly, I mean, I think it came up pretty well. Not to pat myself on the back, but I do that. I'm doing it here. I think it came up pretty well. I don't know if it's my best ever interview, but I think it's one of my top 10.
It is encyclopedic, John. Like it is an enormous amount of work, and it's one of these things that this will outlive you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Which is to say, Jello will outlive you as far as being a topic of discussion and study. And there's going to be someone at some point that's writing a fucking paper in high school about Jello Biafra, and they're going to be just lifting info out of this Punk News article because it's, you know, it's pretty fucking comprehensive, and it's big and in depth and gives some insight. So this is a massive accomplishment, Mr. John Gentile. And anyone that is listener of this show should go check it out because it is it's big.
Yeah, I'm not here to kiss your ass, John, but it was very impressive. I actually the fact that I was people read the whole thing or the whole thing was readable for something that long. It was great. I loved it.
Well, thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Jello is easy to write about because he's got so much going on because he's such a unique person. So I didn't really have to do a whole lot of heavy lifting. The heaviest lifting I had to do was to put it in context. And I will not detract from my interview skills because Jello, he's very hard to keep on track. And not only that, much like the Punk News podcast, it is extremely hard to get a word in edgewise. So even 3 hours to cover as much as this is challenging. So you really got to, I guess, keep the reins on, you know, and make sure you hit the points you want to hit, you know. So so I encourage everybody to read it, and this was a lot of fun. And boys, we're going to do it again in 2018. Who should we? Well, we talked, you know, people talked about Ian MacKay, which would be a good one. I'd like to do Keith Morris, but we already did Black Flag Week, so maybe that would be a little redundant, you know. So I don't know, man. I love doing these profiles, and hopefully we'll do some more in 2018.
There's got to be someone from the British world that we can have this conversation with.
Well, you got to have a good discography. You know, you got to have a nice thick discography, and you got to have influence. I mean, there's only so many, and there's a lot, but there's only so many that really are worthy of such an undertaking.
Ronnie Radke.
Done.
I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, Adam, Ronnie Radke, like if you could get a couple of days with him, that you could actually make a really, really interesting article out of that. You know what I mean? Like, is there really nothing to him whatsoever, or is he actually deep down a very sad, sad man? You know? There's your article.
That can be one of these things where it, like, escalates or, and, like, or all of a sudden, like, you're participating in all these horrible things, and...
Or you'd be disappointed to find that he's, like, a deep guy with like a really rewarding.
Yeah, right.
You've made him sad in all of your podcast ribbing.
I'm sure. He could barely sleep at night on his pile of money with two supermodels.
I don't know. Like side. That's one of my secret fears. I hate sometimes talking to band people and realizing that like how sensitive they are to some like dumb internet shit that I've been involved in. And I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
I didn't want to make you sad.
Well, that was one of the things that came up in that Jello article, was that Jello's fairly sensitive to some of that stuff.
Jello's very sensitive.
And he doesn't even, skips reading a lot of it. But I thought it was very cool, kind of doubling back to that how much Alternative Tentacles embraced it. I don't think we've ever had a situation like that where it was really, of course, we haven't really done an active musician before. But I just thought it was really cool the way he, embraced it and the way the label embraced it. And it was kind of cool. It's fun to have your shit quoted on, you know, alternative articles.
Well, actually, Tom, great point. And I'm so glad we did. We were considering doing some other people. And then I said, well, listen, why don't we do Jello? Because he's always been cool with Punk News. And he's got an incredibly large discography. He's ideal. We should do Jello. And I'm so glad we did. And I'm so glad they were cool. And you know, Jello is not – nobody's perfect. Jello is Jello. He's a very unique person. But let me tell you, Jello really is what he – people says he is, and he really does try to do the genuine punk rock Jello thing. Like there's no artifice there. He really is who he is, and he really does try to stay committed to what he says he wants to be committed to. I mean, really. So I'm so glad we did this. I'm so glad AT was pleased with it and we're cool with it. And it just like they say, never meet your heroes. But I actually generally have not. I mean, I've had a couple of guys that were just total dickwads. But I would say generally, like when you meet your, I don't know if Joe is a hero, but he's someone I admire. I think he's done incredible things. When you meet these people, to learn that they really are, they're not perfect, but they're kind of amazing people that generally are what they, the core of what their core essence, that's so thrilling and reaffirming. You know, him, Keith Morris, Black Dahlia, Buzz Osborne, I could go on and on and on, you know.
Cool. Well, again,
Adam White.
I mean, cool. Hey, I'm happy to know him. So let's wrap this sucker up here.
Adam, hey, listen, Adam White puts his pants on the same way the rest of us do by jumping into them off of his bed.
I don't deny anything. All right, Tom, play us out, play a song, and then we'll get out of here. So podcastthepunktus.org if anyone wants to send us email. And so what do you want to do, Tom?
Good question. I'm gonna play a song by an Italian band that's been around for about 20 years. Since you guys are my Paisan friends, you guys are like the closest thing I have to authentic like Italians in my life. But this band is actually Italian, and I'm not sure how you pronounce the name. It's Latte with like a plus sign. I don't know if it's Latte Più or Latte Plus or just Latte or what. But anyway, I've become kind of enamored with them. They're a lot of these European bands are not at all ashamed to do just like straight Ramones, like homage almost, where the American bands like have sort of bastardized it and made it sort of sucky. So anyway, I'm going to play a song from Latte. It's from their new album that just came out this year. The album is called Stitches, and the song is called Everybody Listens to the Ramones, Even My Mom.
Millions of fans created just to cover their songs. Suddenly all people are changed, but not to Ramon. After a bad famous herd is now something you can grab. Even these stupid shabby mall, a grocery store. Any more boy that needs to alive.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.